So we're going to, for this section, we're going to have a question and answer session, or if somebody wants to share any particular experience they're having, or ask about any challenge that they're having in particular regarding awakening, or to ask if you want me to talk about a particular area or subject, then feel free to raise your hand electronically, which is to click on participants section at the bottom, and click on raise hand. It'll let me know that you want to ask a question or share something. Otherwise, I'm quite happy to sit here quietly. Okay. Maggie, sorry.
I just wondered if you could just talk a little about how it was for you when you had started to recognize that you were this peace and space, or however you want to word it, and you things kept being shown to you, how you went about lessening the impact, which I'm seeing, and it's okay. I just thought it might help to talk about that when something was shown to you, some phenomena, how you stopped buying into it so much, and how that lessened for you. Do you know what I mean?
How to sort of cultivate attention, shift, staying on the real self, the noumenon.
And not fall into the stickiness of the emotions and phenomena of whatever type of phenomena, really.
That's good. Really just accept at first. It took me a while to just accept that's going to happen sometimes. A lot of times, actually, that the attention is going to move backwards and forwards, from focusing on a thought or an object or an emotion. And then I might bring it back to the formlessness, that is my real being. And then over and over again, it would come back. And there were certain thoughts and emotions, thought patterns and emotions, certain people, certain things, lack of something or having too much of something that just seemed to be a magnetic pull, to that attention would go to it, and there was no seeming option. And it took me a while to figure out that that is okay, that that is going to happen, and that there's nothing anyone, not even the Buddha, could do about that. But there is something you can do about your response to it, which is just an acceptance. Attention can either be open and focusing on the formless you, the real self, or it can contract around an object, a phenomenon of thoughts, or and that we our karmic patterns are different for each of us, but they're all the same in that there are places in our life where attention habitually goes like suit like flypaper, to particular thoughts or emotions. The first step is just to really accept that that is how it is for everyone, and it doesn't mean you're failing. It's the we're responsible only for the interest in the formless self, cultivating an interest and a curiosity and a willingness to see. Where attention actually goes, as we were just doing in that meditation, can't do anything about it. But you can gently cultivate a curiosity, bringing attention back to that formlessness. I know it sounds paradoxical because, on one hand, I'm saying don't try to control attention. And then on the other hand, I'm saying bring it back to the formless self. But naturally, something is going to be falling in love with that formless nature. And recognizing that it's not the particular thought or person or emotion that is dragging the attention there. It is just a habit. And for a very long period of time, we have all had a habit of attention going straight to, like, if fear would arise inside my body, attention would immediately go there. And it's so much so that I won't be able to hear what anyone else was saying. I'd just be completely absorbed in that fear. So accepting that that is what is, it is going to relax our focus again. If we're trying to bring attention back, we're fighting with where it's gone to, then it's going to seem to want to stay. If we're shoulding and shouldn'ting that. And then over time, there's more of an acceptance that I haven't changed just because my attention has gone to this thing. My formless nature is still present and I am always that, whether I'm focused on it, myself, or whether I'm focused on something arising inside me. So the meanings, we're going to look at it later in the session this afternoon, but the meanings we give to those phenomena are what keep attention going. So if I experience fear or anger or guilt or suffering before, that would have been given a meaning that it meant I wasn't doing this awakening right, you know. So as you're undoing those meanings, the only meaning it has at the end is it's just where attention went. That's no other meaning than that. Doesn't mean you're doing it right, doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. You're undoing those meanings. So, oops, sorry. So as you are, just gonna hang on a second, sorry. Lovely. So as you are coming to undo those meanings, and when something happens, it just happens, it doesn't mean anything in particular, then they stop happening. Can you get a sense of that happening?
Yeah, definitely. I've just had a spell of like repeated pattern of the impact of whatever is coming up is residual, but I've just recognised that there's been a tension going to phenomena, and there's been a little shouldn't and shouldn'ting going on. But listening to your first talk within 10 seconds of you saying it, I was just like almost laughing inside, thinking, oh yeah, you kind of believe in stuff again, and recognizing that's okay.
Yeah,
okay, because you have all the residue of the how I name it, the sludge, to clear up.
Yeah. There's only one thing ever happening, and that is attention going back to phenomena, to a thing, to a perceivable thing that's happening inside you. Our attention is kind of open and diffuse on the formlessness, and there's nothing in between those. Naturally, if we leave that alone, that process alone, undo the meanings when it just go to a, you know, when it goes to an emotion or something. Naturally, in the meditation, when we stop trying to guide attention to somewhere, it just comes naturally to rest on what feels better.
Yeah.
Which is to just be aware of awareness or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I just wanted you to talk about it because I know I've struggled so much with that in the past.
Mm.
And although it isn't such an issue now, I just felt that residue of it, it kind of caught me a bit, and I just kind of thought it might be helpful to others as well. It's helped me massively, so thank you.
Lovely, thank you for sharing. Videa?
Namaste, everyone.
Hi.
Hi. The question is, there's a term called, like the body's like a telescope or a kaleidoscope, that the awareness views the world. So, in this experience, awareness just feels present everywhere, but there is no sense of it like a looking through a telescope, as if I don't get that imagining.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit on what that term means and why it may be used? How does one see that it looks like you're looking through a telescope?
It's really just the same as the recognition, you're looking through the body, you're looking through the senses, you're looking seemingly at all these objects, and you're also looking at the objects inside of thoughts and emotions. So without the body there, there's no capacity to perceive objects, and there's only the subjective awareness itself. Mm-hmm. And then when a body appears in front of you, inside you, that there's this seeming opposite ability then to see objects. So it's kind of like seeing something you couldn't see without the body. So you put look some binoculars, you can see something very far away and small. But you, the body gives you this capacity to perceive only part of the awareness. But that sense, you know, as it's appearing as an object, but that sense is going to really disappear, that you're looking through something. The more the recognition is that all of this is the awareness, that the whether you're looking through the senses or whether you're looking as the awareness, that it's the same. Whether I think I'm looking at an object, it's really the awareness I'm seeing, because it's everywhere and formless and appearing as all of this. So at first there might seem to be two modes, as we were talking about, you know, looking at the formless reality and or looking at the world through your mind and senses. But gradually they will merge into the recognition that they are the same. That even if I think I'm looking at a laptop now, I'm not really, am I? You know, this laptop is made of condensed awareness, if you want to, you know, the self that's vibrating at a rate that feels solid. So there's no sense of looking through something anymore after a while, looking through the body or having a body or using a body. It's just another way you're appearing. Can you get a sense of it?
Yes, yes. And sometimes if I'm looking at objects, there's a stillness, and it's almost like things are a moving picture in front of that.
Yeah, and more and more there's just disappearance changing. It's just constantly changing, isn't it? Changing in here, changing out there, just like that kaleidoscope that you're saying, you know, just constantly changing shapes, appearances. But it's kind of just happening in the background almost. There's just you, there's just the awareness. And that's become really in the forefront of your experience more.
Okay, yeah.
Lovely, thank you. Gaina?
Hello, can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Hiya, Helen. Hi, everyone. You kind of answered it with Maggie's question, really, but I've noticed over the past couple of days a couple of areas where I've got some really stubbornness.
No matter what you do, attention just goes right back to those thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, and after really noticing that there is another answer through your satsang contemplation, that I could really, it really stuck out this time, if you see what I mean. And I just thought, oh God, if I can't get that, every time I bring it back to that answer, then it just goes straight back, like thought just kicks in again. And just some of the ideas where I'm really stubbornly believing that what I think is right, basically. You know, that real stubbornness. But I can see that. So just your help with that, really. How I just need to kind of, I know I need to look at that, but because there's not really, I don't know, because I'm not really getting the sense of the emotion coming through, so I'm struggling a little bit with it.
Do you mean that there's no sort of negative emotion around whatever?
Yeah, it's not really negative emotion. Yeah. It's more of a stubbornness, I'm. You know, I think it's this, you know, I'm right
and you're wrong, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying that. And I know if I was if I had got into, it's just in my head, but I feel like it would induce an emotion of probably anger or frustration. It
yeah.
would induce that, I think. But I don't necessarily feel it in that moment.
So what does it mean for you then? What's the meaning behind, what does it mean? What does it automatically suggest and you agree with when attention goes to these particular thoughts? Does it mean, you know, and for most of us, anything that was remaining in my own awareness that attention would go to habitually was obviously evidence that I was doing it wrong. You know, that was the immediate conclusion, that this should not be happening in the awakened state. You know, that because attention wasn't effortlessly already resting on the formless reality constantly, then I obviously wasn't the self yet enough or something. There was some meaning given behind that.
I suppose that the meaning maybe that there's something I need to transcend.
Yeah, so if that meaning is believed, like this, my attention going to these thoughts or emotions is evidence that there's something else for me to do, can you ever get out of that? Or instead, could it be that the Buddha just decided that it doesn't mean anything at all, doesn't change me at all if attention goes to this?
Yeah.
And then even further than that, realizing attention goes to these thoughts and feelings, which are the awareness also, the way the awareness is appearing. So attention never really left awareness even then. It just contracted around an appearance, a shape. Is anything actually changing for you or for awareness? So like this, you can undo the meaning that it has. That I'm immediately, we always, and you may have even noticed it during the meditation, when attention goes back to thoughts, it's been resting on the listening itself, the beautiful quietness, and then it goes back to thoughts. There's a sense that something's changed, something's gone wrong, something's happened, it shouldn't go there, you know. Do you get a sense of that?
Yeah. My mind thinks it's a bit more complicated.
It probably will. It likes complicated mind, doesn't it? But does does it mean anything to you? It means something to mind, but does it mean anything to you when attention moves? It's almost like a certainty, given the fact you have a mind and body and you'll have them for some time, attention's going to wander every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
Like no human being has ever managed to keep attention in one place for the whole waking state. But that happens naturally when we stop giving meaning to these things.
Right.
Attention goes to them because we think they're important. Even if we're saying they should not be arising and my attention should not go there, then we're actually going to have to keep experiencing it.
So it's not so much the thing itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's
what we make of it, what it means to us. Am I going to reference myself and my identity as someone failing? Am I going to conclude that I'm failing in this awakening, or I'm still not getting it right, or I'm not there yet because this has happened? And if this happens and it just happens and it doesn't mean anything, you know, then naturally attention will just open up again to the formlessness.
So it's not so much that I'm not being a spiritual in that moment. Like, I just think in that moment I'm doing something wrong because I'm having thoughts from an ego rather than having the point of view of somebody who's, do you see, is that kind of what you mean? Like,
yeah, if somebody knocked on my door now,
yeah,
attention would go to that sound. Doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. Why should it be anything goes wrong if attention goes to a thought? If we say that shouldn't be happening now because I'm noticing you, I want to keep noticing the awareness and saying that if my attention is still going to particular karmic patterns, thoughts and emotions, whatever gets triggered, that is wrong and shouldn't be happening. because there is a place where that doesn't happen at all. But you don't get to that by saying this should not be, you know. But let it go wherever it goes. It doesn't mean anything to me. You know, if your phone started ringing, attention would go to it. Your mind starts talking, attention goes to it. An emotion arises, attention goes to it. How long attention stays there depends on what sense, you know, of what that means for us.
Right.
And to an awakened being, it would mean nothing at all. To an ego, it would mean that we're really not there yet.
I've got more to do kind of approach.
Yeah, because ego wants to do more. And if there's nothing wrong with wandering attention, then it's got nothing to do.
Even it doesn't matter how long it wanders for.
No. You can't control it, can you? How many times does your attention wander, even while you've been listening to this? Mm. I don't mean right now. I mean, obviously you're listening, but attention is going to drift at some point. Mm. You know, that's how it is for all human beings. But eventually it doesn't mean anything. It has no significance. Whether the mind's talking or not has no significance, and whether attention goes to those thoughts or not has no significance.
Yeah.
And this is very much with what we're saying to Maggie as well, you know, very similar.
I think, because then what happens is if I do go, I think ego gets, you know, understands what you're saying there, and then, but then it says, well, if you go with that attention, and then you say something or do something, then it, I kind of then punish, you know, coming from that place rather than a, then there's always a little bit of judgment around that as well, I suppose, but.
So, emotion arises, mind judges, attention wanders, mind judges. Has it changed you? What does that mean to you? Are they all just shapes you're taking in that moment? Or are you doing it wrong? Is it happening to you? Mm. There's a huge difference between the two.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a really spiritual mantra towards the end where it was just, so what? You know, the emotion has arisen, so what? You know, these thoughts, attention's wandered again, so what? Mind is judging, so what?
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, very spiritual. Very effective.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Phil, did you have your hand up, or as it, if you suddenly disappeared somehow? If you did, what have you were in the queue, but if...
Oh, have I disappeared from the queue? Yes, I did.
Yes, yeah, sorry. I might have accidentally... I might have accidentally hit you when I lowered the other person's hand, sorry.
I'll live with that. It's sort of been answered a little bit in the reply to Gaynor, I think. I noticed that my attention is going in a direction that I do something that I thought would have nothing to do with sort of my spiritual work at all. So I do a lot of physical training. I really challenge myself. And over the next year, I intend to massively challenge myself. So time on time, I try and do more and more and more. So that isn't a problem for me. However, so I've disregarded that from any kind of contemplation because I thought about that, and that is wanting to be something I'm not, isn't it? It's trying to be fitter and healthier and achieve more.
Depends where it's coming from, doesn't it? If it's coming from a healthy respect for the body as an appearance in the self, then it's just happening. It's an emergence of love, wanting to look.
That's what I thought. So I thought that there is no negative connotations whatsoever with it. However, I do. My attention does go to it a lot. So my attention, I've noticed, goes to planning and how much better I can do and even subconsciously setting targets for myself that I will achieve. So I'm sort of just a little bit now thinking, well, am I conning myself in thinking that that it's coming from all the right places? And perhaps it's not, because it is quite intrusive. The thoughts do come in quite a lot when I really didn't expect them to. So as things are moving on, these thoughts are sort of coming in and filling the void left by other thoughts that I'm not having.
Yeah, something wants to keep thinking just in case. It's, yeah, it's probably that there's mixed motivation, that there's still some egoic trying to get somewhere with this, trying to prove my worthiness, just a little fragment underneath. You know, because it will take something that you're doing and try to get somewhere with it. And there's also an emergence of love, as the body is the self too. It'd be much nicer experience while it's here if it's fit and healthy, you know, out of respect, not fear, for the body. And it's probably just that you're noticing you're becoming more aware of these subtle motivations where ego is still trying to keep, to regrow itself, to sustain itself, that there's somewhere to go, somewhere to get to. Yeah, so a good question was why am I doing this? You know, not like mind's way of asking, but why am I doing this? And I found that most of the things I was doing, there was a mixed motivation. There was a general wanting to eat better because I know I feel better when I eat better. You know, my body feels better. But there was also a should underneath it, you know, of I shouldn't be eating the way I am type of thing. As it, you're probably just beginning to notice the little mixed motivation. Wanting to just let go of where that drive still to get somewhere is going, is still functioning.
So it's sort of a motivation in that I should be fitter than I am and I should be able to have more endurance than I do type of thing.
Yeah, because what does that mean to you when you're there? You know, for me, everything was going on that I wasn't achieving how I thought I was supposed to be, including my own awakening, was evidence of my unworthiness, to prove my own unworthiness. So just undoing these meanings, you know, I'm as fit as I am, I'm as healthy as I am, it's going to continue to increase by itself. But I must admit, I'm all right in this moment. I'm whole as I am in this moment.
Yeah.
So you can pursue those things, but without trying to get somewhere, you know, without trying to prove something to yourself. And yeah, it's probably you're just slowly coming out of that. I don't really want to be trying to get somewhere anymore. I'd like to just enjoy where I am.
That was where I was leading up to. Should I contemplate this? And I think I probably should contemplate it to see what the motivations are, shouldn't I?
Yeah, and you probably find, like a lot of things in our life, there's two motivations. The self is just expressing itself for the joy of doing these things. You know, it can be incredibly joyful to move the body. And there might just be a little smidging of trying to prove myself or get somewhere.
I am very competitive. I have been.
Nothing wrong with that. But if we're kind of using it as a way to beat ourselves up inside somehow, then, you know, that's something to look at.
Lovely. Yeah, thank you for that.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks.
Caroline?
Yeah, namaste, everyone.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. My question was, it might be a bit obvious, but I wanted to ask you, how important is it to have a meditation practice? Because the meditation is still a doing kind of thing. Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to explain it, but like what Muji says, you can meditate for 12 years and sit in a cave or so, but it doesn't mean that that you know what awareness is. So my question is it better to be in the moment trying to stay in that awareness as much as you can, or would a steady meditation practice benefit and speed up the awakening process, perhaps?
I think, yeah, definitely to start off with, it's worthwhile, especially to, you know, knowing that there's plenty of things in our environment that's going to distract us. It's worthwhile, it was for me, to have a formal time where I'm going to put aside this time, switch off my phone and do, you know, and I'm just going to notice the awareness, notice the formlessness. And that's important for some time, but it's a time that you're setting aside to see what you are. It doesn't have to be a doing. And that will gradually change and morph into something that begins to happen naturally when you've got up from your meditation, your formal practice. Mm-hmm. There'll be a noticing, there's just awareness here, you know, while you're moving around and doing other things. And eventually you find that you won't need a seated practice, a formal scheduled time. It'll just become more and more obvious, more and more present. That real self is just obvious in your experience. So to start off with, yes. But again, it's not something anyone can say, okay, now you can stop formally doing that. For me, it just kind of morphed into this. I want to feel like that all the time. I want to feel so good when I sit and, you know, just recognize this real self, that I want to feel like that all the time. And it became this, I just started to challenge myself in all areas, whatever I was doing, you know, can I notice this moment now? I'm driving, while I'm cooking, while I'm cleaning, and but not out of a trying to do more. It was more just of, it was a very all-consuming thing. It felt so good to kind of notice that real self. My mind and body just fell in love with that, and it just became, I have to feel this way all the time. So it moves from a doing to a being, you know, and it moves from something that you're doing at a specific time per day to start off with, and then becomes a constant, not all the time here, but when I remember to remember my real self, just wonderful, you know, and less, more and more periods of silence the day, less and less thinkingness, and just a gentle redirection of attention. I notice I'm really fixated on thoughts or feelings or something. So it becomes something you're being rather than something you're doing. It can feel like a doing to start off with, but even then it's a seeing, isn't it? Naturally something is hungry then. I want more of this. I want it all the time. I don't want to ever lose it. So that's just the evidence of that. It's just shifting towards, I don't want to segment my life into formal practice and the rest of my life. I want to be as aware as I can of my real self when I'm moving around.
Can I just ask one more question? As soon as I can have a really good day of being in that space, and then the next day I can be being completely taken over by this, my whole body is vibrating, my mind is just taking over again. Would that lessen if I would meditate more, or how do you stop that? Like it just happens.
Yeah, if you look at, like we were saying before, look at what thoughts and feelings does attention go to automatically. You can even, you don't even have to wait for it to happen. You can sit down with a pen and paper and say, okay, when this person comes, knocks on my door, or when this situation happens, or when this emotion arises, attention, you know, I've seemed to have lost my peace, and attention goes straight to that. So you can have a list of trigger events, emotions, thoughts that just grab attention immediately. And then just look at, what do they mean when that happens? You know, does it mean that there's really only one meaning that's given to us, and that is it should not be happening. We all look at awakened beings and say, well, their attention isn't wandering at all. Anything can arise in the mind and body, and they don't lose the knowingness of what is real. So therefore, if that's happening to me, I'm doing it wrong. But they got to that effortless place by not listening to these meanings. I am that, whether my attention is totally fixed on mind and I'm having a very unspiritual day, I don't feel very enlightened today, that it's no difference than yesterday. It's no difference at all. It doesn't mean anything. You know, so what? You know, and then in that attitude, and Because whatever you're saying, you're so powerful, whatever you're saying should not be happening. It has to continue. So what does it mean? You know, if there isn't enough, what does that mean? If there isn't enough time, what does that mean? If there's too much anger, what does that mean? If there's not enough peace, what does that mean? It's always, I think a lot of these questions in this session have been about this general meaning that we have that we're going to assume is true, that there's somewhere else for me to go. Because this thing is still happening, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, so instead we could say, well, what if I'm still there, even though this is happening? I'm still that, even though I don't feel peaceful. And see how that changes things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just okay. look at the meanings behind it and see.
Mm.
It's always that we conclude that I'm not the Buddha yet, you know. Very simple.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Good time. Lovely. Mike.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah.
So, this is along the lines of what everybody else has been asking. So I'm going to take my own crack at it here, in terms of the attention and things like that. And it's more just a growing realization. And not an intellectual one, but a seeing that everything is the self. So any thought that arises is the self. Any emotion that arises is the self. So even if it looks like an adult temper tantrum, the realization is that is still the self. There's no separate entity or being in this body doing it. And it's looked at as by the self with the same sense of reverence and peace as, say, an adult temper tantrum is looked at the same thing as, you know, a Buddhist monk in front of a Buddha statue meditating. It's not really seen any differently.
It doesn't mean anything. Yeah, it doesn't mean anything to you, yeah. Does it? Whatever's going on in the mind and body. Yeah.
Yeah, as the self, because it's still all only me ever.
Yeah.
There was no separate Mike in there, like, what's the word, confounding God's plan somehow. You know, it's always
like
been,
we could actually do that somehow, you know.
when I look to see, it's like, and what's amazing is how the self had believed this thought that thoughts, feelings, and sensations in the body constitutes a separate entity, and that all other 7 billion beings were playing along with this belief, you know, yeah. Going along with this belief, and was all really just the self. So it causes, at least when those initial bodily dysregulations happens, I don't have to go along with the thought, well, like everybody else is saying, like, you know, I'm doing this wrong. This can't be the stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, watch this being, and they're obviously effortlessly resting on the as the awareness. It's spontaneous, it's effortless, and they're obviously not focusing on thoughts or emotions. They don't even really know where mind is. So if my attention's gone to mind, then I'm obviously not where they're at. It is the conclusion that we all draw, you know, I'm obviously not there yet. Something else I need to see or let go of or do or become. In the end, there's just this, it doesn't mean anything wherever attention goes, and that's how those beings got to that effortless, spontaneous. Naturally, attention springs back to the formlessness when you stop trying to drive it around constantly. And then that lack of trying to change everything, there's a realization at some point that everything I'm looking at anyway with my eyes is the self, is the awareness. Therefore, there's nowhere I can look and nothing I can experience that is not the self, is not me.
So yeah, even if it's if what I look at is a thought, or even if what I look at is an emotion,
yeah,
it's still me, it's still the self. So it's always like the mind thinks it's going away from the self, but really it's
impossible.
It's impossible.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Yeah. And that becomes a lived experience then. It does not matter where my eyes wander to, where my mind wanders to, where my attention goes. It just doesn't matter. And there's an effortlessness in that then, isn't there? Just whatever arises, arises, and it's all fine. Naturally, from that place, what arises tends to be more pleasant and more fulfilling. You know, rather than trying to hold our experience in one place and say it should look like this.
Right. Yeah, and I noticed that the relaxation and the peace just sort of comes more naturally as the self realizes there's nothing to look at here. sort of like a police officer at the traffic accident. There's nothing to look at here. You know, just move along. There's not really much. And then the peace just sort of comes naturally because it's not being taken up with attention to an anxious thought.
You're not trying to sculpt the sculpture. It's just moving on its own, then the manifestation. And there's nothing in you that says it should or shouldn't be this way.
Yeah. And it can only do that as the self. I mean, as a person, there's just too many preferences.
Ironically, when you stop trying to control, it starts to look like you've always wanted it to anyway.
Well, yeah, it was the realization is it was always looking like the way I wanted it to anyway. Yeah. This wasn't realizing it as the self. It wasn't realizing it because I was paying too much attention to thoughts of it shouldn't look this way.
Yeah.
So I was just checking in. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's very good. So everyone's questions are on the same theme, which is no surprise. Amy?
Hi, Helen.
Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Good, good.
I haven't had a brilliant couple of nights sleep, so I'm going to try and formulate this. But first question is quite a human one. I've noticed, so I've been doing the chanting, and so I was doing a lot of singing training most of my life, really, and then 4 or 5 years ago, I moved to Cornwall and my creative practice turned into something else, so I completely let go of the singing. And so coming back to it, there's a massive change in the voice, and I can't do what I used to be able to do with it and all that kind of thing. So there's loads of mind that has come has come into it. And so it was, I think it was Phil that was talking about the training, the physical training and that. So I've been sort of sitting with things as they come up, because there's been like self-worth stuff that's come up identified with the singing, and that it's not sounding right and that it needs to sound better and I need to practice in a certain way, so all the old training starts to try and kick in again. My partner's a musician, he'd like me to sing on some things, and I'm just like, my throat just closes up and I get all, there's a massive reaction of like shyness, and I'm sort of working through it bit by bit, but I just wanted to ask you if there was more help with it.
I would look at it, look at the reason, but like we were saying to Phil, why are you doing it? Why do you want to sing? You know, and that is, we could ask that question of anything we do. You know, why do we want to wake up even? And just like anything, if we're still, the more our awakening is deepened and realization is deepening, the less functional our life will become in an area where we're still trying to do it from a place of having to get somewhere, that I'm using this thing to prove something about myself, my worthiness or something. And if I can't do it, then it proves I'm not quite up to scratch, you know, up to par. So a good question is, why am I doing this? What's the reason for it? You know, can you sing just because it's joyful? Just because it makes your body feel good? Can you sing just because that's what wants to happen? That's what the self wants to do right now, you know, and for no other reason than that, just to filter out the other, you know, we could do this with our satsang as well. Why are we in this intensive? Just because it's joyful. No other trying to get somewhere from it. Naturally, then there's going to be a shift in our experience then. I'm doing this just because I love to do it, and not for any other reason. And I don't need any experience to dictate whether I'm good enough or not. You know, I'm going to be, whether you manage to sing and perform and, you know, everything is amazing, it's not going to change how you feel about yourself inside. you know, the seeing has gone deep enough, then no experience that happens to my mind and body is going to define me at all, positively or negatively. Like I'm doing this just because it was what wants to happen. And so if you're sure that your worthiness is linked to something you're doing, like singing, then you're going to have to not be able to sing to prove that you're not worthy yet. And it literally manifests as a can't say anything.
Mm.
You know, when I was holding satsang, if I came from any unworthiness at all, I literally couldn't speak at all.
Mm.
To remind myself, I'm doing this because I love to do it, no other reason.
Mm.
You know, that's so, you know, why am I doing this and do I need to prove anything from it?
So those would be the key questions.
What's my motivation for doing this? And like we were saying to Phil, there's probably two motivations behind it. Naturally, the singing is wanting to start happening again because of the joy that you're feeling more and more, the peace that you're feeling more and more. It's a natural thing that happens. Everybody has something they love to do when they're feeling joyful, whether it's just singing, dancing, or sitting quietly. That's arising just because of the joy it brings, and it agrees with your inner joy. But it's probably also got this other motivation behind it still, of if I don't do it right, then, you know. So yeah. It's just sort of sieving out that motivation that you'd like to just let go of, not making it wrong.
Yeah.
I don't need anything to prove to myself who I am. I know who I am.
Yeah, so looking into that motivation, like what is, what am I trying to get or achieve, or, you know, what's at play?
Yeah, and if it happened perfectly, if I was singing in front of 100,000 people, they're all loving me, and I was just perfect performance and everything was great, would I feel any different to how I feel now?
Mm.
Mine said, yeah, you really would, you know, but knowing what you know about yourself now, your real self, is it changing that? You know, it really isn't, is it? So you can have that experience, but it doesn't have to define you at all. You can enjoy your experiences more and more without these needing to get something from it going on underneath. So these things are going to come up where, like we talked about with Phil, where there's still some motivation to get somewhere, just for you to sort of look at and go, is there a higher reason for doing this? You know, a more joyful reason for doing this? And it's probably just what you want to do. That's all. That's the only reason. You know, like when we were kids, we only ever did anything because we wanted to do it.
Mm.
Just because it was fun, and that's it.
And that's it with the mantras. It is that more because it's you know, coming from a different place. But then when I try and do other types of music, that's when all the old training kind of pops in and tries to get a hold again. But it doesn't. It just feels so jarring now. You know, like.
It's a big change, isn't it? It's noticeable that I've switched back to my old egoic perspective here.
Mm.
So you can just shift a gear back again and say, is there a better reason for doing this, a higher reason?
Mm.
You know, is there other reason for doing this than the current motivations? And you can feel that heavy stickiness coming along. You can just go, well, is there another reason for doing this?
Mm.
Lovely.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. Last but not least, Ian.
Hello.
Hello.
So a lot of areas in my life are going quite, kind of flowing better.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one area that was flagged up quite recent that, I sail totally under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to kind of look at it and contemplate on it. I've gotten a lot of different things, but wasn't quite, seemed all kind of mixed together. But when you talked about, I think your first talk, you spoke about the moment, this kind of thing, the moment, you know. It made me realize that I still have this tendency going on that I try and try and prepare myself for the next moment. So I'm continually trying to kind of, it doesn't happen all the time, but there's still a tendency there to kind of like do the old thing where if someone says this, then I'm going to say this, and then they'll say that, and then I'll say, and I try to cover all the bases. Because it makes me, I guess it, there's something that going on that thinks that's a safe thing to do.
You want, yeah, ego wants to be prepared for every eventuality that could happen.
Yeah, so it came up just during, because I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere with this digging it out, and then you talked this morning, and I thought, oh, I've still got that thing going on, and obviously it's quite difficult to do most of the time. In lockdown, it's a little bit easier because I'm not going out very much, and so it's like, but I feel like it's still kind of, so there's something kind of trying to protect.
Yeah.
And hide still a little bit because I don't know how to kind of react to certain things. Or
if you notice, that's the general mind, ego, separate self motivation, isn't it? To try to prepare, anticipate what might happen and react and respond to that in a way that's going to keep you safe and all the rest of it and get you what you want.
Yeah.
And if you notice that's still going on in one area of your life, you know, we've probably all got some area where it's happening, then it seems to be the theme of all of these questions really today. You can just notice that is still the way you're functioning. Like we said, it's just a shift of focus. This is still my motivation in this area. Can I just shift to a different motivation? Like whatever it is that you're doing, when this motivation arises. So for Amy, it was the singing or you know, Phil, the working out. You know, for me, it was things like cooking, you know, things like, why am I cooking? Well, because we've got to eat, you know, and I'm not very good at cooking and I hate cooking and it's just awful and can I just get it over and done with? And then I just started to realize, actually, what if I do it because it's fun? You know, what if I see if I can enjoy it? Yeah. You know, I'm not cooking a meal for a particular time or a reason. I'm like, just do it because it's fun. And amazingly, I started to enjoy it just because I wasn't trying to get anything out of it. If it turned out a disaster, it turned out a disaster. Turns out I'm actually quite a good cook, which is a big surprise to me and to everyone else around me. Yeah. But I only discovered that from shifting the motivation. Why am I doing this? You know, like, before I was just so obviously doing it to prove to myself that I'm an utter failure. Mm-hmm. Here's all the areas of my life where I'm still proving to myself, unconsciously of course, that I'm not there yet, you know, because I'm not Gordon Ramsay or something, then, you know, that's evidence that I'm not there. So whatever area it is, it's probably just that there's still some motivation, that you need something out of it. You need approval or recognition or safety or security or love or acceptance or some egoic motivation. And if we don't make that wrong or bad, we just say, okay, that's what's happening here. Is there another gear I can shift into? You know, what's a higher reason for doing this particular activity or thing? And you'll find that there's also always this motivation of the self. It doesn't have intention or desire as such, but it just wants to enjoy itself. And it's always possible to do that no matter what the body is doing if you just shift up a gear. What if I didn't need anything at all from this? What if it couldn't prove anything to me at all? You know, it's the more awake we get, the more we'll see these areas of our life where we're still functioning in a way that's efforting and trying to get. And it's not wrong, it's just another option now, isn't there? If we don't make that wrong,
okay,
like what's another reason for doing this?
It almost
does it affect me if it goes wrong completely? Is it going to change my self-definition? that'll tell you a lot, you know. If absolutely, you know, if I set the kitchen on fire, am I going to decide that I'm a terrible person because of it? Yeah. Which would have happened before, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's just, oh, I need a new kitchen or a new wok. Can you get a sense of that? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like there's a little bit of fear still around being like spontaneous and just going with life, you know what I mean? It's kind of.
Yeah, always being spontaneous.
Yeah.
Even if you're spontaneously repeating the same habits. The same beliefs.
Yeah.
They're spontaneously appearing again and again and again, effortlessly.
Yeah.
Spontaneously. The same Groundhog Day over and over again.
Yeah. So
it's always been spontaneous. Even when we're planning an activity, we're spontaneously planning it.
Yeah.
And then it spontaneously happens.
Yeah.
If we say, like, we're going to book a retreat, we're going to hold a silent retreat on this day, that thought just arose, didn't it, then?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't plan, right? I'm going to think this thought at 10:32 p.m. tonight.
Yeah, I've got you.
So it's just ego thinks you're changing to become more spontaneous. You're just recognizing the spontaneity. That's where the greatest security is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
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 Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So we'll...
Helen.